Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. And I am really excited to kick off another episode of our mini series on service and therapy dogs and the importance and the benefits to our community of you know, at an individual level and having someone by your side like that. And it's such a beautiful thing. And today we have Karen Richtman on. She is a member of our mitochondrial disease community. And I welcome her. Thank you so much for being here, Karen.
I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's just start right off the bat and tell us how you're connected to the mito disease community.
Okay. I am a mito patient. I have a mitochondrial myopathy, which means that they don't really know exactly what is the problem, but it leaves me having a lot of fatigue and daily pain because my muscles, my cells rob from my muscle in order to get energy. And so it limits a lot of my activities and I have to pick and choose very carefully and have a balance every day. So that's my connection, and that's kind of how I got into this kind of volunteer work. So it'll all tie together.
Well, I really appreciate the energy you're putting forth to be here with us. I am sure that our listeners would really like to hear about the journey of you and your dog coming together. So can you tell us about, like, how did all this happen? Paint us that picture.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. All right, well. Our dog, his name is Hugo, and he was born in 2020 in the middle of the COVID epidemic. I had been looking for a dog for almost 2 years. We had had one of our dogs die, and the other one was really sick, and I was thinking I really needed a dog in my house, so I kept looking and looking and looking in the rescue organizations, but I think everyone else was looking too. And so we
yes,
could not
were.
Find that dog. So in about early March of 2020, 2021, let me think here. How did that work? He's born in 2020. Yeah, 2021, early 2021. I found this really interesting post on a website that I've been looking at that just talked about people who had dogs to place. And they had an 11-week-old Labradoodle puppy who needed a home. And I thought, perfect, that's exactly what I'm looking for. So I asked him questions about him, like, you know, tell me about what he's like and how big is he going to get? Because how big are his parents? And he was a standard size of a Labradoodle, which they said he'd get to be about 60 pounds. And they showed me some pictures. The woman talked to me a lot. And I was like, oh, okay, where do you live? So she lived way out in the country. It's COVID, right? Okay, so we're like, all right.
Everything's an obstacle. Yeah. I mean, going to the grocery store is an obstacle.
Yes. So they agreed to meet us partway between where we live and where they live. So it was about an hour and 15 minutes drive for each of us. It was a cold winter day.
Yeah.
And when we drove to meet them, and here is this big gray mama dog in the back seat that is huge. And I think, oh my God, what did we do? And this cute little black and white, what they call a party poodle mix, which means his dad actually was a black and white poodle, a standard poodle, and his mom was this gray ball of fuzz that was just like, oh boy. But he was so darn cute. And of course, all puppies are cute, but he was really, really cute. And we agreed to take him, and they told us there was this problem with him that, you know, he had something coming with his hair coming in, and so they would give us a discount. We're like, great, we'll take him. Smart
wasn't
move
even
on our part.
Ask for a discount, but if you're going to give me one,
yeah,
right?
Right, I'll take it. Yep. And so they gave us his little bed that he slept on. They gave us one of his toys, and we put him in the back seat. And this puppy, who has never met us before, laid down on the back seat on his bed in the back seat, and we rode home and never heard anything from him the whole way home. And got home, and when it was time to come in and see the house, he was so funny because everything that was happening in the house, the clock chime went off on our little clock, the furnace came on, the anything that was a noise he was listening to, he was looking and trying to find it. And then the next, so I knew this was a dog. I'd never had a dog like this before. And I also knew that he, when it was time to feed him, he sat his butt down on the floor as soon as he saw that food dish and he didn't move. And I thought, whoa. So he was not only polite, but he was really cute. And he was just the kind of dog I wanted. And I thought, okay, we're good. So that's how Hugo came to live with us.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
So you needed like a mild mannered, not super active.
I needed that.
Yes. Because,
yes. I did need a dog that was active enough for my spouse who really wanted a dog that would go out to the garden with him or go for walks. And I do go for walks, but I don't reliably have the ability to go for walks. So he was, it was very, we had an agreement between my husband and I. It wasn't necessarily something he was 100% behind, but he knew how bad I wanted this particular dog because of his breed. And I did already have an inkling of where I wanted to go with this because I retired in April of 2020. And so I was a newly retired right at COVID starting. And my life was not going in the direction that I wanted it to because we all weren't having what we needed to do. So I was very excited about the potential of what Hugo and I could do together. And so, yeah, and we should have named him Hugo because Mr. Hugo grew from this really cute little puppy to a 57-pound, very long-legged, I mean, extremely long-legged dog. And he, everybody, our grandkids call him a giraffe.
That's adorable.
Yeah. So he's a funny guy and he's a lot of fun. But yeah, so that's, I needed a particular kind of dog for me. But I wasn't really thinking about me in the sense of therapeutic because he isn't that kind of dog. He's our pet.
Okay. So when you got Hugo, you weren't thinking anything medically related to...
Right.
To getting this dog.
Right. So the difference between a therapy dog and a service dog, that's the most important difference between the two, is that a service dog comes to you as a dog that is trained to help you with daily living skills. And a therapy dog is trained by its owner to go out into the community and provide emotional support for people that need support. So he is...
Or for you.
Well, it turned out for me, that wasn't exactly how it started.
So you wanted, did you initially want Hugo to give support to the community or?
Yes.
What,
yes.
That came first.
That came before I knew that I kind of had it because of his mannerisms. He was such a gentleman. I thought, well, maybe he's going to be a good dog to take out into the community because I knew that in my bucket list of things I wanted to do when I retired was to actually do service. And the reason why I wanted to do service is because I had always done service. My job was related to service. My childhood was related to service because of what my parents did. I just really like giving to other people. And what is so cool about therapy dog for me, just for me, not necessarily for other people, is that Hugo is... He bridges the space between me being a person with a disability and being an able person. And so when he and I go to visit other people, I am an able person coming in to bring this dog to make the lives of someone who isn't having a very good time about things. Or children that just need an extra little support and some fun with a dog. And so it's a beautiful win for both of us because I get to do the volunteering I want where I can sit down and visit with someone. My dog visits with them. It's just a really nice, very doable thing. And I started thinking about, the reason why this podcast partly happened was because I really wanted to share with the Mito community and with anyone else who listens to this podcast that when you have a limited ability to do things and you get a chance to just bring your personality and your dog that you love into someone's space and make them feel better and provide a soothing moment for them, it's beautiful. And whether you're using a chair or a walker or you're able to just walk on your own, it's something doable. And we don't have a lot of doable things in many of people's lives in the Mito community.
I hear you with that one. I definitely know what you're referencing to. So tell me about the support that now that you've had Hugo for almost 5 years, right?
No, 4 years.
Four years? Okay.
Yeah.
So you've had him for 4 years. What kind of emotional support? Talk to me about how he helps you on a daily basis.
Okay.
Because I understand that when you're watching him help others, that's beautiful and that makes you happy. And that's a joyous occasion for sure.
It is very much
and
so.
And it enhances your life, let's say. But on a daily basis, when you're at home, maybe if you're having a day that's, you know, a bit more of a struggle.
Well, the first inkling that I had that he was going to be my therapy dog was when he was just a little over a year old. And they was going to help me, not just help the world, but help me. I got COVID and I was, as many people in with a mitochondrial myopathy of any kind have, it was a very challenging recovery. And Hugo and I were home alone for, it turned out to be 7 whole months. I couldn't walk to the garden. I couldn't go to the mailbox. I couldn't go do anything. I was just wiped out. And Hugo would climb on top of me and lay across my entire body. Now, this is a big guy. And he would just lay there. And I found out later that that's what dogs do for each other. So this was just instinct on his part. He laid by my side. He laid on top of me. He never left my space all day long, all night long. He doesn't sleep with us, but he was right there. And to this day, he continues to pay attention to when I'm hurting. And when it's a really bad day, he wants to get on me. And I'm like, yep, you picked it up, buddy. Don't know if I want you on me, but yeah. So he has,
so
he does provide.
Connection.
I know, it's a very cool thing. And he is so gentle that he seems to know to get up very carefully. He doesn't ever hurt me. He just very calmly climbs up and lays down. And I'm like, okay. I guess, I don't know, but I do love how he just seems to have that. And he and I, in our space at home, he's definitely my pet, you know, mm-hmm. We have a different relationship when we're doing therapy work. And so it sort of hit me by surprise that we would end up in this place today where he equally provides support for me with providing support out in the community as well.
Yeah, it seems like those are two very different pillars. Mm-hmm. And he's smart enough to be able to do for you and to do for them. And it's a bit different.
Yep.
But that's just amazing. I was never a dog person. And the last couple of years, things have changed. And now I can't fathom how I wasn't a dog person before. And these stories are so moving to me. And I swear, if I was asked to do this podcast 5 years ago, I would have maybe needed to, I wasn't as passionate, you know? And so I feel how lovely this story is. And I'm so excited for you that this has worked out so nicely. So do you, you know, looking back on the last couple of years, do you feel like you trained him?
Well, I didn't train him to have his innate ability. Dogs have that ability to be sensitive to the human condition. Mm-hmm. And actually, I just learned recently from the woman that I work with, we both train therapy dogs together. And she was telling me about dogs being not really that they weren't recognized in the community, in this country, maybe other places too, but they weren't recognized as having this ability. So it's really relatively new when you think about 1986 seems like a long time ago, but dogs have been around for like eons, right? Back
well
to the Roman
before
times.
1986.
You know? Yeah. So it does kind of strike me as surprising that part of it is the breeding that we've brought dogs in, you know, generations and generations of dogs in to work with humans. But when you have a dog that you've developed a relationship with. And so that's the key to the therapy dog piece is that Hugo and I did do training. For example, for that first year of his life that before he became a therapy dog, when I fed him, and nobody told me to do this, it was just like my gut instinct of it, was to feed him as I trained him. So when I would feed him his meal, I would put it I would put a handful in my hand, the rest went into a dish, and then I would walk him around the house, giving him training and then feeding him the rewards from his dog food. And as we did that, he became really good at all the basic commands and things that you'd normally go to a class for. But because of COVID, it wasn't even an option to take him to puppy class or obedience or anything.
Yeah.
And he did great. He was really, really amazing. He was just, he and I became very bonded. And actually the reason he became so bonded to me is because dogs accept us as leaders because we feed them. And so I always fed them. I had a deal with my husband that I would always
be the one.
Him. Yep.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah. It was really cool. It was really, yeah. So then when he became a year old, I started thinking about the therapy dog piece and I did some research on it. Like, what do you need to do to become a therapy dog certified provider? And I read all that and then I started looking for it, and it's still COVID and I'm autoimmune and I'm worried about getting COVID and I haven't had it yet. And I go to find a class that's at a local dog school. And I remember talking to my husband about it and saying, I really want to do this. And think about this. This is in 2022. I've been home for over a year and a half, totally isolated, except masked. And with only people that I knew had not been with other people. And so here I am thinking I'm going to go to a dog training class with my dog because I really want to do this. And I say to my husband, I don't think I can pay this money to go and do this. I'm too scared. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know what's going to, you know. And he said, and why wouldn't you do this? And so I actually called and talked to the woman who's teaching it, who I now co-teach with. And she and I talked for probably an hour about Hugo and what he was like. And she says, wow, you guys have a great relationship. Please come meet me. So I go and meet her and they analyze how Hugo and I are doing and invite us to join the class. And I said the one condition, and people with Mito might really understand this, was that I absolutely needed everyone to be masked during that time. And so I said, I'll buy the masks if you will, kind of push people in that direction, because the mask mandate ended just before this class started. And so they agreed to it. The dog school agreed to it. And the co-teacher agreed to it. And we actually started with everybody masked and finished with everybody masked as well. And most people really were just fine with it. They were.
Oh,
it
was so glad to hear that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it was cool. And it took a lot for me to be that assertive, but I wanted this so bad. I was like, I got to do this. I've got to ask.
Such a yearning also to get out of the house and to really start your retired life and, accomplish some of these goals that you've set out for yourself.
Yep.
So now that Hugo is a therapy dog and you take him out in public, have you gotten any pushback in the community? If you take him into a store or, something like that?
No. Well, he doesn't wear anything to indicate that he is a service dog or a therapy dog.
Okay.
So he's allowed to come into certain stores. And I know that. And I have brought him to a few stores. But here's the thing about Hugo that I didn't know. So that day that we came home and he was listening to the clock and he was listening to the furnace, he actually has a problem with noise sensitivity. And we didn't know it. So when I bring him into a store, it's really training for him because he's afraid of the noises of the store. And it's been really a challenge to find locations for us to go and do therapy work because he is so noise sensitive. But in terms of I just want to say one more thing about in terms of the certification and training, because I think it's really important that people know that. So when you have a great dog and you think, oh boy, this might be a dog that I want to do therapy dog with. It is the class that I took was 12 weeks long. The shortest one I've ever heard is 6 weeks long. And you actually go and you have to learn how to work with your dog in a way that you're the leader, but you're not the dictator. You're telling the dog what you'd like him to do. And then you're asking the dog to do it, and there's lots of ways you can do that through sign language, or you can say it with words. But through that 12-week class, we learned all about what you need to do to be a really good leader for the dog, and also how to manage situations that are going to be complex at times and having to make decisions about what is okay. So when Hugo and I became certified, we took a test to do that. And it was pretty scary because I had never tested with a dog before, but we did pass, and it opens the door to bringing Hugo to libraries, long-term care facilities, schools, all different kinds of places. And so I work really hard at finding the places that he can go to where it's going to be a welcoming atmosphere. So one of the places that we volunteered at, go back to Pushback, is that one of the places that I went to was the public library. And I was there in the summer of 2023, and it was actually a pretty good time from a health perspective. And I went and I had him reading with children. So we'd walk in and we had a little space, and we put a blanket on the floor, and he would lay down on the floor next to the children. They would read him a story. He was really scared at first, but then he got good at it. And as long as the children would put their hand on him, anywhere on him, he would lay there and listen to the book. But if they ignored him, he ignored them, and he'd get up and go get a drink of water. So I figured out pretty quickly what he needed in order to be able to do this. And it worked out really well until COVID reflared and the library refused to ask that the parents would let their children wear a mask for the time that they were in this space with me. And I requested it. I didn't require it because I was just going to mask. I said, I already mask when the kids come in. So it's not it's kind of a deal breaker because it's really high levels. But, you know, anyway, they said no. And I thought, okay. And then there's the pushback that happens because certain places only let certain certification programs come into their, like into a hospital.
I was wondering about that. Yeah. Yep.
And even though we're with an internationally certified program, I have the certification with, there are limitations in terms of some of the places I really thought I wanted to go in. They aren't available through this program, and they have this crazy thing that says if you certify with one company, you cannot be a member of that company. You have to retest to go into a different company. So you can't have two different certifications. You can't. So it really made for a challenge to choose what I wanted to do. I've done a lot of different places, and the only thing that I have experienced is having to teach the people at the facility what it is I need and Hugo needs. And that's my job, is to keep him secure and safe and take care of my dog, the first thing, right? So when I go in to meet with a volunteer coordinator, I set up, you know, here's my criteria. You know, and they either say yes or they say no. And it's okay. I'm all right with that. So we did the library. We did in an in-home hospice type situation. We've gone into a long-term care facility, but it didn't work because it was too noisy. And we worked with young people in a program that is called Valley Outreach, Valley Friendship Club, which has people of all different abilities up starting at age 13 was the group that I worked with. And some of them were young adults in that group. We've sort of made our own pathway, which I love about therapy dog work. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. This is something you get to pick based on what your dog's needs are and what your own needs are. And the beauty of it is that, for example, someone who might be in a chair and have a dog, they could wheel themselves into a care facility and have accessibility with no problem at all. So to me, that was like, the beauty of it was I can pick where I am able to go and be the, you know, and then make, and then I always have to think about what was right for Hugo. He did not like memory care kind of visits. And it's a tough one because he's so smart and so aware of all of his surroundings and wanting to understand it all before he wants to go in, that when he goes in and there's people screaming, they're not doing it to harm anyone. It's just how their brain is working. And then that's a place he can't be. He's got to be, if he's in a place where there's a lot of kids making noise, then we have to have a quiet space for them to come visit, which is what we did with the young people. Hugo and I would come in and then they would send small groups in to spend time with him. And in the room, as we went longer and longer there, it got to the point where Hugo had a room full of kids that we'll be quiet. We will. He's very
so popular.
Sweet. Yeah, he's very popular. And that's what I want. I want to be, I'm there for him and mm-hmm. he's there for them. And so it really is nice when they want to take leadership with him enough to play with him. Or we did a lot of scavenger hunts with the young. So he aww. they'd hide his dog food for me and then he'd go find it with them. And they thought it was the greatest thing ever. But, you know, there's rules. They say that the children can't feed the dogs, for example. So if he's doing tricks, I have to be the one that manages tricks.
Yeah.
And I don't usually use treats for that. But I would be, with the scavenger hunt, we just laid the food out. And then that was a way to keep a hands-off approach for it, which was great. Mm-hmm. And it worked out perfectly. So some of it's my own creativity and how I'm gonna get through the challenges that both I have and Hugo have to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been really cool.
It seems like Hugo has done so much for you, like times two, because Hugo is great for you at your home and as a, you know, a comfort, a companion, and really, you know, as you mentioned, like lays on you when you're having a day with some more pain, and then allows you to kind of go out in the community and provide for others. Right. I mean, that is so wonderful.
Yeah, it's really an empowering thing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that when I was trying to figure out what did I need and what did I want and how was I going to get there and all that. I guess I just didn't even think about that. I had a situation where I was going to step out of my, I wouldn't say I'm a victim at all, but I definitely have my challenges that people sometimes feel sorry for me, and I'm not even particularly obviously sick or anything.
Yeah.
But I do definitely have things that are going on. And so if someone feels sorry for me because I have a mitochondrial myopathy, I don't want them to feel sorry for me. I want them to celebrate what I can do.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of what I can do. So
seriously.
It's cool. Yeah.
So looking back on you, you know, getting Hugo and training him and going through the class, would you do anything different if you were to start over?
I might have asked a few more questions about the dog before I got him, because he turned out having a few things, like he's autoimmune like me, which is ridiculous that I have a dog that has autoimmune. But this is silly, and I'm going to just tell you because it makes him very unique, is that he has black nails and white nails on his feet, and his body is attacking his black nails. So they break really easily. So my dog comes in and he's wearing boots. He has red boots, black boots, made of fleece boots. So depending on where we're going, he's booted because his nails are so fragile.
Wow.
And I don't want him to scratch anyone or have someone step on his foot and hurt his foot or anything like that.
Is that hard for you to manage a pet that has health issues of their own?
Oh, sometimes. We're right in the middle of one of those right now. But I had surgery to replace my shoulder, and I'm one-handed. And so putting boots on is pretty challenging with one hand. But here's what he does. He puts his foot on my leg if I just, you know, like ask him to do that. And so I can just reach down, you know, and work on it. He helps me.
Wow.
I'm like, that's a smart dog for you. It's really, really fun. I always wonder what he's going to do next, because he's still growing up. I mean, he's now a mature dog, but the first few years are of a, you know, not for everyone, for a puppy, but at least the first year, you're really challenged by just management. But I want to say that it's not about telling him, you don't have to yell at him. We don't have to say bad dog or anything. It's like he absolutely has learned it's a tone of voice. It's not a raising of a voice, and calmness always wins out. So mm-hmm. if I can stay calm, say, man, I didn't like that you did that, buddy. So he was having a problem with some medicine that they were trying to give him the other day, and he started gagging, and he ate, this is crazy, but he ate the wood that was sitting for our wood stove. He ate the pieces off of it. So he regurgitated this disgusting pile of gross, and then I put him into his kennel to keep him from puking on the floor again. And he ate the hair off his tail because he was in so much distress over this medicine.
Oh, no.
It really made him sick. So not unlike our mito family out there, the drugs are really, really hard on his body, and finding ones that work for him has been virtually impossible. So the boots are becoming the answer.
Yeah.
But that's funny to me because I think, okay, you know, if he could wear a mask, I'd probably put a mask on him. It's just, you know, like one of those things about I go out masked and I could just put one on my dog and he could be saved too. I wish it was, that's all it was.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, the boots are pretty funny because people will say, you know, oh, he lost a boot. And some days we don't put a boot on if his foot's looking good. And plus he has one foot that doesn't have any black toes. So that foot's always good.
So he doesn't need that.
Right. So they'll stop us and they'll say, did you know your dog lost its boot? So
no, that's not a problematic paw.
Yeah, it's very funny. So yeah, it's been much more than I thought it would be. And I think in terms of changing anything, I think I would have, if I were to go into it today, knowing what I know now, I would know that that whole testing and certification that I was so worried about and so type A about, that I made it so much harder on myself because of my perfectionism. And that it's just about the relationship with your dog. So if you really like your dog and you want to be more of a peer with your dog, but still have control as the leader, it's okay. You can do that. It's possible to do that as a therapy, a partnership with your dog. It doesn't work if you really like obedience and you want that perfect dog, might not exactly be the right fit for you. Because the dog is, he has to, like when we go in to visit people, I was thinking this might be something that people would like to know, that when that I'm not just going into someone's home and I'm not just going into a facility, I get to choose where I want to go, but each one of those is a unique situation. And the training is so intense because I needed to be able to lead Hugo with calmness and respect for him. And if I don't show respect for him, believe me, that's when he balks. And since I've been helping with teaching therapy dog training, I realize that that's the dogs that are successful with their partnership with their person, their human person, tends to be very calm and very precise in what they're asking for. And like I said, it can be verbal or nonverbal. Dogs respond really well to nonverbal. So the hand signals are really cool. And I was thinking too that so much of therapy dog is establishing a relationship with your dog, but that starts the day you bring your dog home. And so I never took classes on it. I just knew that when you yell at a dog, it just cowers, and that's not the answer. And so with
the like last couple kids.
Yeah, like raising kids, right? I remember yelling at my first dog and it didn't work very well. So I think developing a sense of trust between the two of you, between you and your partner dog, becomes a really cool thing. And that trust it starts like the day that you know, when people don't take their dog out and they take them off a leash for the first time and they go racing off and they're thinking, oh, I'm never going to get this dog back. Well, do you yell at the dog and run after it? Or do you trust that the dog actually loves you and is going to come back? And maybe it's a little of both, but I do think that that is kind of a good analogy of, I trust Hugo. He's going to come back. He's not going anywhere. And he might falter a little. He's still a dog. And he still, you know, still loves the squirrels and the bunnies and the deer and stuff. But he doesn't go far and he comes back. And so I just try really hard to remember that my job is to take care of him when he steps into his role. I mean, my job is to take care of him all the time because he relies on me. But in terms of
part of his job is also to take care of you.
I know. And to take care of other people. So Hugo and I we had stopped during the library and I was struggling with where to go to visit. And I contacted this company called Family Means that does home respite care for people. And they had a listing under the dog therapy certification website that said they wanted therapy dogs. So Hugo and I got placed with this family, which was a man and a woman who lived in their own apartment within a big facility.
Okay.
And they were independent living, but he was declining and they're both in their 80s. And so Hugo and I went there to meet them. And the very first day that we got there, the man from the Family Means was there and the man's wife and the man that wanted the therapy dog to come. And we get talking and find out that, you know, they've had a dog and the dog was the same kind of dog we used to have. And so we found all these commonalities. And Hugo's just going over there and visiting the guy. And he's like, you know, I'm sitting close to the man, not sitting on his wheelchair, just, or his walker. And just, he's in his chair and his, you know, everybody's there. And the next thing I know, the guy's patting his lap, just tapping his lap with his finger. And Mr. Hugo decided he was going to jump up on this man's lap. And I just about freaked out because I thought, I'm going to get kicked out of therapy dog. I know I am. You're not supposed to let your dog jump on their lap, especially a 57-pound dog. So Hugo very carefully puts his feet up on this man's lap, and the smile on his face was unbelievable that he had this dog was on his lap. I said, no, I have to take him off. No, don't take him off. So therapy work is, every time can be a big surprise.
And yeah,
we continued to visit there. And the man, when he went into hospice, we followed him in for one last visit because he actually died pretty quickly after he went into hospice. But we went in and Hugo jumped on the bed with him, laid down and snuggled with him on the bed. And I, the whole time I'm thinking, this is not what I thought we'd be doing. This is not how I thought that, you know, like this man was an amazing conversationalist and he loved to ask me hard questions. So as he was visiting with Hugo, he'd be asking me like, what's your first memory? Have you ever had this happen? And, you know, tell me about this. And really, I thought I was supposed to be asking him the questions and finding out about his life. And he's like, I want to talk about both of us. And so one last thought is that when you go in to visit people in a care facility or in their home or anywhere else with your therapy dog, you are a peer to that person. Whether you're 25 years old or 65 years old or 75, 90, whatever age you are, you are a peer. And so you're not there to care for them. You're there to visit them. And that's a really big paradigm shift from what I was thinking when I signed up. It's kind of scary sometimes, especially this one very special person that I got to visit. He changed my life. He just taught me something about people and about being a good therapy dog visiting team.
Yeah.
And about just love and caring. They invited us to the funeral. Hugo and I went and his family all told us about how he talked about Hugo all the time and how much he loved him. And I was like, this is really what I'm doing this for. This is, brings me such joy.
I'm sure you love Hugo more because you know the extensive benefit that Hugo is giving to so many people in your community.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's really cool. Yeah,
he's so passionate about Hugo. Yeah. I want to meet Hugo.
Yeah, well, if you ever come to Minnesota, you can meet him. Or at the conference, I'm coming to that, I think, but I don't know if Hugo will be there. I'd like to bring him there. I've asked to bring him there as a therapy dog. So it hasn't happened yet. I asked last time I went to the conference. So we'll see.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story about you and Hugo. And it's been lovely talking to you. And thank you for being a part of our podcast.
Well, thank you for asking. This was really fun.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.